The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 469. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
What's up, people? How's it going?
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
What up, people?
And Brian Monjoma.
What up, what up?
All right, you already know. By the way, tonight we're trying interesting test. Manny, what are you doing on your end?
Well, right now, if you are looking at my Twitter account, you will see that I am running an audio version of our show. The idea is that we can maybe possibly not only continue to do the Twitch and the YouTube, but also throw an audio version of it onto our own Twitch. We figured out some means to be able to do that. So, yeah, it's just a test. I'm testing it out on my current Twitter. So, we'll see how that goes.
There we go.
Yeah, and by the way, just looking at it right now, it's like mad delayed.
Uh-oh.
So like Twitter is like just loaded the intro.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, this is a test. Right. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
It's a little test,
but yeah. We're trying it. That's what counts.
This is a test.
All right, let's get into it, man. No Adam action. We don't know what's going on with Adam.
We don't know what's going on, but we do have new revelations.
What's going on?
Well, he texted in the chat for the first time in a while, so you know he's still moving around.
I mean, wrestling news. He's like, oh, what?
there's a lot of stuff.
You talk about Vince McMahon, and then all of a sudden that shows.
You see
up.
A Macho Man gif. It's like, okay, here we go. Anyway, so we didn't get too many questions tonight. So if you want to ask us anything live, please feel free to. Otherwise, this will be a very short show. Remember, this show is pretty much dictated by you guys. You know. So let's get into it. So we actually got two questions that are related. I'm gonna ask both of them. We'll get into it. One's from Q Band Boss. The other one's from our homeboy, Mr. Michael Santiago. I'm gonna go with Michael's first. Are Microsoft and Sony making a mistake by not getting into the handheld market? I feel like they are behind the times as handheld PCs are gaining momentum every day and will chip away at the gamer market. So that's Michael's question. Then Q Band Boss's question is: I wish Sony would listen to the market and realize that portability is a huge thing. A dedicated place in portable that wouldn't need its own games, but rather allow you to download your PS5 and PS4 games purchases and take them on the go, kind of like Steam Deck would be a huge seller for them. Also, has anyone done remote play on the Steam Deck, and how well does it play? I'm older now, and most times I enjoy playing my RPGs or my indies in short bursts right on my bed or couch on a handheld. All right, so let's take all these one by one. I kind of consider any Windows 11 handheld to effectively be a Microsoft fucking console, you know. As a matter of fact, when I went to go check out the Asus ROG Ally for the first time, you know, when they unveiled it, there was a Microsoft representative there, and you know, they gave a little speech about how, you know, they want, you know, Xbox Game Pass, you know, there's some partnerships going on. Because, you know, when it's Windows 11, so you could get Xbox Game Pass running on it. So effectively, Xbox already has handhelds. Any Windows 11 handheld is effectively an Xbox handheld. Obviously, doesn't have the branding and all that, but it is. As for PlayStation, you know, after, you know, our beloved Vita died at the hands of Sony, you know, I think they're reluctant. That's why we have the Portal right now, the famous Sony toe dip, as we call it, you know. So I think they're trying it, but they don't want to get full on into it. But the other thing I want to talk about, what Q-Band Boss said, is what he's asking for, it's not really possible right now. Okay, with PS4 games, yes, I could see that because, like, if you think about it, the Steam Deck is effectively running PS4 games, right? Pretty well as the main console could run it. You're not getting PS5 games to run on, like, portably. Not yet, you know? That's not going to happen, you know? So that's not realistic. So that's why they don't do that, you know?
But, Tony, they already have a portable. They released it last year.
The port I just talked about that.
Yeah, like that one.
I set the toe dip, you know? But he's talking about playing games locally, not that streaming bullshit.
Well, yeah, and I kind of agree with you with, I mean, because, you know, push your glasses up and say, technically, all these Windows 11 machines are like Xbox machines. Yep. But, you know, I think they could do a better job at advertising and creating their own version of it. I mentioned previously how they could work with the Surface team to possibly release either a laptop or maybe a handheld or something, because they've worked with tablets and portable devices pretty good, and Surface tablets are pretty respectable in the industry. So if you can do like an Xbox themed one, or maybe even work with ROG or Asus or one of those companies that make those devices, that would also be a good thing for both companies. If you do a dedicated Xbox handheld device, obviously it'll have Windows 11, but just putting the emphasis on this is what, you know, Microsoft and Xbox and Uncle Phil support, and you know, it comes with 3 months of free Game Pass, and it gets people in the door.
Yeah,
it's a win-win, I think.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, and I've talked about this on the show many times, the main problem with Windows 11 handhelds is that they run on Windows 11. And Windows 11 doesn't have like a dedicated like UI for gaming. It's not really suitable for like button controls and stuff. Really good for touch controls, obviously, with the tablet and shit. But it's like, it's just very clunky. It's like, it's not as seamless as Steam Deck. So it would be good if anybody, it doesn't have to be Microsoft, if somebody created like a launcher UI that was like fully optimized for a handheld system, you know, Windows 11 UI, that'd be great, because that's the main problem, you know? Like, once you run whatever UI they're running, whatever launcher, it's kind of fine. But again, I've had too many instances where it doesn't even, like, I'm pressing a fucking button and nothing happens, you know? And obviously, if you go into desktop mode, those button controls don't work at all, you know? So it'd be good if they have some kind of UI that just works like Steam Deck. I remember when I was checking out the Steam Deck OLED, right? You know, I'm over there pressing, you know, using the touch interface, like, oh, wait, I don't have to do this. So I was so used to the Windows 11 handhelds. The buttons always work, you know? So that'd be good. But
Steam Deck and Valve, they've been working on UIs for Steam OS, Big Picture Mode, all of these for a long time now. So they have a lot of experience working with dedicated gaming UIs. And Xbox, I don't know if they even care, because I think what they're more worried about is getting all of these different companies to implement their apps. I mean, we saw recently that Apple is going to soon, you know, there's going to be availability for apps like Game Pass to run on there. So I think that's the type of market that Xbox wants to corner, more than just, you know, doing what Steam Deck and ROG and Asus is doing.
Second time you did it, I have to stop you. Asus and ROG are the same thing. Like, you know, Asus is the main company, and they make the Republic of Gamers brand.
Yeah, because it's an Asus ROG ally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's the other company that does it? Lenovo?
That's what I figured you were trying to say, you know. But I was like, I'll let it slide, you know. And then put it two times.
Yo, man. Yeah, you can't do it more than two.
Lenovo
and all those.
Mm-hmm.
So
and MSI too. And MSI. Well,
there's a bunch of them.
There you go. Yeah.
And Nintendo.
Yeah, well, they're not using Windows 11, but, you know.
But they're doing, you know, they're doing portable gaming.
But you're right. Say what you will about the Switch, that interface works fucking flawlessly with the hardware, you know?
It's so a simple interface.
Yeah, we need that for these Windows 11 machines. That'd be great, you know, because it just pulls you out of the experience, you know? It's just not as seamless, but yeah. So, you know, again, the other part is like, you're not getting, you know, dedicated PlayStation 5 games on a handheld for many years. That's not going to happen, you know, unless you want like a big thing. I'm pretty sure somebody DIY'd of something, you know, but like, nah, it's not, that's not going to happen. It'd be dope. What's up?
Kishak asked, wouldn't a dedicated handheld also mean exclusive games on that handheld? Otherwise, what's the point?
Nope. Not really. I mean, there's no exclusive games on Steam Deck.
Yeah. So they,
you know,
that we're getting more and more into a place where there's a lot more parity between the mobile and the, and, you know, the desktop. Obviously there's still a big gap, but not like I used to be.
Hold on.
I mean, Steam Deck.
Yeah. Right. Real quick. Gotta give a shout out to my homie, the Brooklyn Bears in the house.
Oh, the other Mr. Polanco.
Yeah. The other Mr. Polanco. That's right. That's my nephew right there, Ben. My, what is he? My nephew or my cousin? He's something. He's related to me. He's somehow. One. You know? Anyway, go ahead. I give my man a shout out because he hasn't been around in a while, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like, damn, where was, oh yeah. The dedicated games for the handheld. I think that's the thing in the past.
I agree.
You know, Sony didn't even care for like after the first year. When they released the Vita. So, you know, they're not going to do that. And Microsoft, all they need to do is do the, they might not do the dedicated, but they'll have the cloud. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad you bring that up because it's true. It's like, again, Steam Deck success, no exclusives on it, right? And, you know, when I was at CES, I asked, you know, when I went to go visit with Asus, I asked them, you know, how well did the ROG do? And they were like, it did better than they expected, a lot better. And no exclusives on that either. So I agree with you. It's like, you don't really need exclusives on the hell. You just, people just want the experience they have at home on the road. It doesn't have to be an exclusive, you know? So, and it's been proven, you know? Brooklyn Bear says Xbox should have a dedicated streaming device. They should have their own PlayStation Portal for Game Pass. Like I said, it would be cheaper, obviously, but I, like we said earlier, it's like you already effectively have a portable Xbox with the ROG Ally and the fucking Lenovo Legion Go and the MSI Claw and all those other fucking Aya Neo systems that come out every other month, you know?
As much as that's a good idea from some point, people's point of view, it's honestly not, because anything that can open a web browser can access xCloud.
It's true.
And that's it. Because that's how it works on the Steam Deck. You literally, it's so funny, you literally install your browser of choice, and then you point it to launch xCloud/play, and then that's it. That's literally how xCloud streaming works on the Steam Deck, and that's it. So hence, there's no real need. Like, you can say, oh, you can have an app for that, like how it is on probably, how it is on Android phones, but then again, anything that opens a browser, you can do it. I mean, if the PlayStation Portable or Portal could open a browser, I'm pretty sure that you can have a point to xCloud.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the reason they stopped that, by the way.
Maybe.
I don't know. No, that's a good point. Kishai says Windows sucks in general for mobile. Yeah, I mean, from my experience, it's not good for, at least for the handhelds. I don't know, you know, I mean, it works fine for tablets and all that, you know. I don't have a problem with that. Like the Carlos said, the Surface Pro is fine, you know. Windows 11 works fine. All tablets I've run, yeah, Windows 11 tablets are fine. So, and those are mobile devices, so it's not that. It's just Windows 11 is not good for handhelds yet, you know. All right, anybody else want to jump in on this? Oh, yeah, the other question, my bad. Has anybody tried remote play on Steam Deck?
Oh,
no.
Well, I actually have.
Oh, right, Brian. Now, so. Yeah, go ahead, Brian. What's your experience with it?
It was okay. It wasn't anything special. It just felt like remote play on other stuff that I've done on. So, again, there is a noticeable amount of lag. It's very minimal. But it is there, and getting it up and running, there's no official support for it, so I had to go through some means of downloading some stuff, doing some, not workarounds, but just going through and doing some commands and stuff like that. But once it works, it's fine. Again, remote play, I managed to platinum a small game on it, and you and there's a part that had like some rhythm focused stuff, and that's where you notice it, because obviously it's that latency just can't get to you, so you kind of have to like adjust your inputs to match it. But apart from that, it's all right. Didn't really have any qualms. My PlayStation was wireless, so it was all right.
All right, yeah. Cool.
It'd be nice if it had like a dedicated like app for it or dedicated support for it, rather than just having to go through and download someone's GitHub app and run it that way. But I don't know. It's PlayStation. I doubt they'll care.
All right, good stuff. Moving on. By the way, Jolly Yellow Nerd, I did get your second question, so we will ask that later on. So thank you for that.
Good stuff.
Q-Band Boss also says, thank you all for all you do, and I wish you all nothing but success in your respective lives and career. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot, guy.
Good thank stuff. You. All right, another question from Mr. Q-Band Boss. With WB not sending IGN a review copy of Suicide Squad and telling them straight up no copies for you guys, what do you think happened? So get list a couple scenarios. WB
it's soup Nazi stuff. No game for you.
No game for you. So here's a couple, so he wants to know which one of these is what happened. Warner Brothers is displeased with IGN and the whole "we played Suicide Squad and didn't like it" preview headline. WB is not confident in its product and is hoping normies that don't keep up with gaming news will buy it, and not many review copies will make it out, if any at all. Or three, they're only going to send a review code to those shitty YouTubers to hype people up to buy shit. Choice number two, that's actually what's happening. They're not confident in their product, because I know it's not just IGN that's being denied, right? I know a couple people, I'm not going to name any names, that were just saying, nope, you gotta wait. You're not getting the code, So that lets you know right there, they're not confident in this product,
Yeah, usually the telltale sign of that a company is not confident in their product is you will see that they will get their, you at least see that everybody gets all of their review copies late, like very close to launch. Or the other thing, the other thing is if IGN was the only one that's not going to be getting their.
So it's not a matter of they were upset by the headline. No, it's not that. It's just they are being very sub. I don't know anybody that has a review code. Everybody's like, I didn't get one yet.
Yeah,
that tells you something right there.
Yeah, they're most definitely keeping it close to the chest until the last minute, so they could still catch all of the people that didn't read any of those things beforehand, and then still make some money off of it. And then once after that, that's when everybody will have all their reviews and say it's an utter piece of garbage.
Yeah. Richard Bailey, he's like, I heard my boy Brooklyn Bear is definitely copying this game.
Oh.
Oh, man. He's like, whoa, Rich. What's going on, Fnatic? He goes, it's crazy how developers don't send out review copies. That's a serious lack of integrity, and it's deceptive. Yeah, because, again, here's the thing. Most people don't really keep up with this stuff, they'll know about it when the reviews are out, but if the companies control when the reviews are out, that's what it is. It shows that they're not confident in the game. They know the game's going to be eviscerated,
Yeah, they're essentially trying to control the narrative of the title. So in other words, you try to get as much of your sales as possible beforehand based on the name alone. And then that's when later on is when all the reviews hit. And I mean, there's very, very few situations where there has been a late, late review copies, and then the game was actually a pretty damn good game.
Yeah, like Doom Eternal, that was a great game, and nobody got the review copy early. By the way, real quick, Brooklyn Bear says, WB should be disappointed with me too. I played the alpha for a few hours and hit the delete button. So there you go.
Damn.
Who's to say they're not?
I think the thing about it is that they saw the numbers. They saw the drop-off rate. They probably saw as much of the things as possible. This is what we call damage control, like pre-damage control.
Yeah, based on the alpha, because nobody was happy about it. Nobody was happy about it. It's like, what do you expect?
It's an unfortunate situation, because I actually know people that are helping along with that. that game. Like, in other words, the former, like, I worked on a company called the company that made Fractured Lands, who's also doing the Harry Potter game currently for Warner Brothers. They're assisting these guys on the online aspects of this game. So it's unfortunate, but you know, it's not the DC titles, you know, it's not the language of that, you know.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is. But then at the same time, this is like a weird like situation that they've made themselves, because from my understanding, first they attached it to the Arkhamverse, which again was extremely popular. So again, tell me if this sounds familiar. They attached it to the Arkhamverse, which was extremely popular, and then they started writing their own characters in that universe that behave not like they would. And in no one's big surprise, can you try and guess what villain character is in the Suicide Squad game?
Oh, let me guess. It's a guy who smiles and laughs a lot, and he has pain on his face.
A very funny man, yeah. So what I see
let's back it up a little bit. If you played the Arkham games, you know why that's incorrect.
Exactly.
Is said funny man being played by said funny voice actor that played him for years?
I actually don't think so. If it is, then it sounds very, very different. And the fact that the thing that really irked me is that they kept on mentioning that this is like an Elseworlds version of this person. So I was like, so you're writing your own, so you're attaching yourself to an established universe, and then you're writing your own characters, and then now you're saying that they're Elseworlds characters. Why don't you make it an Elseworlds game?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know why you're doing that.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I heard that, I was like, yeah, this game is somehow going to be worse than Gotham Knights, which is so surprising. Yeah, I clocked out and have zero interest. And I started out as a really interesting concept. I mean, you get to kill the Suicide Squad, kill the Justice League. And it's like, okay, it's not every day you get to kill like your favorite characters. So I was like, okay, this sounds cool, you know? You get to actually go up against them and see how that would be. And then it kind of just got worse and worse and worse until now we're just here. And again, the one thing that is extremely annoying about this whole situation is that it was his last performance, and it's in this travesty of a game. Oh,
man.
Like, everything else, I can just say, okay, it's fine, whatever. But that's the thing that sticks with me. It's like, possibly the best Batman we will ever have, and this is how he goes out. It's like,
that's upsetting.
Extremely.
Well, there you go.
It's just sort of it is now, you know?
Game's going to be trash. Nobody likes it. We told you nobody would like. As soon as we heard that show was going to be games as a service, we're like, this shit's done.
Yep. You literally. Again, like, it's from that whole era, like that whole point in time where everybody's trying to do games of service. Like the last Bat Family game, that was a service sort of game where it was like a multiplayer thing that didn't work out. And then the thing that, you know, these guys, Rocksteady are doing is essentially that same sort of idea. Like it's like there was like a mandate in there. They're like, oh, we need to get on this Fortnite stuff. We need to make, you know, these battle royale. You know, like, what is this?
Jumping on it like after the fact, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And it's like, did you not see what happened to Avengers?
To be honest, like, it really shouldn't have been such a, like, I could excuse this sort of thing if it was a smaller, you know, like a smaller affair, right? Like, you have this sort of title. But you still obviously you have the big Rocksteady title, right? You know, whatever that's going to be. And then you have your what I call the side quest game, which is a smaller budgeted, you know, online game if you really want to hit that market. But yeah. it shouldn't be like this built, you know, this $1 billion affair. It should be a smaller affair that you could easily just add on to. And I think that's the biggest issue with a lot of these guys. They're putting way too much. They're putting like big budgets into these things that are supposed to be smaller affairs.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, so yeah, this game, dead on arrival. All right, when is it coming out, by the way? I know it's soon.
Let me take a look.
I thought it was around February 14th, give or take.
Is the Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League?
Yeah, that's it. Well, yeah, when is that shit dropping? Friday, Richard says. Oh, shit. Oh, this Friday, Rich?
Oh, 2/24.
Oh, February 2nd. It's Friday. Dead on arrival. Dead on arrival, man. That's it. It's over. Over.
Yeah, that. I mean, we saw the trailers. At first, it looked a little interesting, but then as more of it came out and more of it was, the information was announced, the more it's like, I don't know about this. And it got delayed.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we saw it was Games as a Service, like, that's it, it's done. Mr. Jolly Yellow, we'll get to your questions next, sir. He goes, when it comes to these huge budget games, where exactly does all that money go? It just seems like the money is going everywhere except for into the game itself or the pockets of the actual workers.
That's a really good question. Like, I feel like there's a lot of bloat and a lot of it goes into marketing. And there's some that just gets lost with, like, you get diminishing returns, right? Like, you put 50 people on a project, you get X amount of work. Putting 100 people on the project does not necessarily get you twice the results. And so when you get to really big teams, you kind of start reaching diminishing returns to a certain point. Like, granted, that's the only way to get some of these big multi-billion dollar games, like, you know, like Sony first party games. You're not going to get that with a small team, no matter really how great that small team is, but you're still going to have to deal with those diminishing returns. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing about all of that, because it's like you got to realize everybody's all on salary, everybody's on a, you know, obviously they need to pull different, like, at least in this situation, the Justice League situation, they literally needed to hire an additional studio that had expertise in online and working with Unreal Engine, which is what they worked with on Fractured Lands. So they were able to keep the team on Fractured Lands, they were able to keep a consistent event system running between multiple computers. So I'm thinking that's one of the reasons why they wanted to have them on there. But I feel like maybe the situation was so above Rocksteady's ilk, or whatever they could do, that they needed to get somebody in there. Again, like, when it comes to games, it's a lot of, there's a lot of different factors that can bloat a budget, you know? It's not only just fidelity, you know, it's not only just authoring, you know, assets. It's also, you know, UI, it's all kinds of stuff that sort of can really compound things. But I also feel like that it's also like having a big budget company like Disney saying that they need to make a small movie when they attempt to make a small movie, but it's not really a small movie. They have like a billion-dollar effects budget on it, you know, even though it's just a family drama. You know what I mean? It's almost like it's expected to be expensive, even though it's supposed to be somewhat be a smaller affair. But, you know,
yeah, I don't know if you mentioned this, Manny, but, you know, promotion is also a big one.
Yeah. Promotion can take a lot. Like, advertising is a huge portion of what you're a part of your budgeting. So, like, that's why you see, like, some studios take a sort of, a more of a grassroots approach. I almost feel like Larian sort of done a grassroots, approach to the promotion of Baldur's Gate. I mean, granted, obviously it's a Dungeons and Dragons game, and, you know, Baldur's Gate is also quite a well-known franchise. But I also think at the same time, I haven't experienced like 1,000 ads all over the place.
Yeah, it was Baldur's really word Gate. Of mouth. Yeah.
It was literally they used the grassroots, the quality of their game to push it. And that, once it hit that point, and then people, you know, the word of mouth sort of hit, that's when the promotion started. So it already had been making money. And then after that, not only having the, obviously, you know, having the good word of mouth from the people, that's when I think they activated what I call the machine. And then now you start seeing those things everywhere. But I mean, like going over to like PAX, like they had a very large presence there. Their booth, Larian's booth was right up in the front, like twice in a row for Baldur's Gate. So I don't know. Maybe they were just a little bit smarter about their things, but it didn't seem like they were trying to throw it in, like constantly trying to throw it into your face that this thing is coming out. And like, it seems like Suicide Squad seems to have all this big promotion all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Manny mentioned salary as being one of the big ones. You know, people that are contractors, people that are there at salary, a lot of them take money. And something that isn't talked about a lot is when video games are delayed, that costs a lot to delay the game.
It does.
So, you know, if you're delaying a game a year, that's, you know, when you start a game, you have a budget for, you have a timeline and you have a budget and you have a rough order of estimate of when, of how much it's going to cost to make this game and around what time it's going to complete. And if you don't, you know, if you have a game that's going to be completed at $100 million by 2020 and it's delayed 2 years, 4 years, that's going to inflate your budget by a lot because you're not taking any income from the game and you're still hiring people to develop it. And it's just a lot of money that goes to all of this stuff. And even though delays happen a lot, they are costly. And that's why sometimes we get broken games because they don't want to take that hit and they want that money to come through.
Yeah. By the way, this is what IGN tweeted out yesterday. We won't have a review of Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, Rocksteady's new game as a service, looter shooter, as codes have not been sent to reviewers ahead of time. So again, it's not just IGN. Nobody's getting this fucking code, you know?
Yo, Tony, is that verbatim what you just read?
Yep.
Oh, so I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a question show. So is the way that they said it, like, oh, it's a looter shooter, whatever type game.
Yeah, I'm gonna read that again because it did seem like a dig, you know.
Yes,
Rocksteady's new game as a service looter shooter. Ain't that something?
That sounds like a pejorative.
Because they could have taken that entire part out, and the sentence would still work. But that was just a dig, you know.
Hey, they just want you to know. Want you to be aware.
Mm-hmm. Literally, I'm going to read it without that part. We won't have a review of Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, as codes have not been sent to reviewers ahead of time. They could have said that, but no, they had to tell you. This is the fucking gas shit, man. You know? Oh, man, that's brutal. All right, there you go. Dead on arrival. Move on here. Mr. Jolly Yellow Nerd, the official questions. After watching the Xbox Developers Direct, I've made a 180 on Indiana Jones and the Great Circle from uninterested to interested. Out of the games mentioned in the Direct, do you think there is one that could be somewhat of the flagship game for Xbox this year? A system seller gets people in stores or online. For clarity, I'm not saying that such a game would single-handedly get rid of the Xbox curse, just a game that could lead it to being a great year for Xbox. That's a great question. Here's the thing. I want to say send you a sacrifice, but it probably isn't going to be that. Just because, even though to me it's a selling point that is short, probably not. That's probably going to hinder it for a lot of people. I think if the Indiana Jones game is good, that could be it.
Yes,
because of it's Indiana Jones. Even though I'm absolutely not interested in that game, I think that could be a big one for Xbox. It literally could be like, this is our Uncharted or something. They're not going to say that, obviously, but people will see it that way. Just in first person mode, you know? So yeah. If any game's gonna do it, it's probably gonna be Indiana Jones.
I don't know. Indiana Jones seems like one of those, I don't think people are gonna take Indiana Jones seriously.
I mean, I'm not, but I'm just going, hey, it's a big franchise, people know it, you know. What do you think it could be then, Brett?
I feel like Hellblade is a big one. Like, again, like, I don't, like, it's, some people will criticize it for being short, but I don't know if, like, the people that will be criticizing it, there are other games, like, can you criticize a game for being 8 hours when you praise a game for being 20?
Yeah, you're talking about the Xbox guys?
No, I'm talking about just journalists in general who fucking, want to like bend over backwards to slob Last of Us knob, man. Like, that game is not that long, but it is. You want to talk to a close allegory, like a gritty kind of deep to the point ish story without a lot of unnecessary padding that pushes a lot of your buttons. Like, it hits a lot of the same notes. I'm not saying it's anywhere near a 1-to-1, but like, and I'm not saying that there's no difference between like 8 and 20 hours. Like, how long is it only 8, or did they say it was going to be longer than that?
They said 8.
Okay, that's about as long as the first one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is exactly as long as the first one. Again, to me, that's a selling point. You know, like, I don't want to be playing a game for 50 fucking hours. And I would love if Senua's Saga, was the flagship game, but I don't see it being a flagship game. I think it'll come and go, you know?
Yeah, I could see that too.
I think it'll be critically praised, but gamers probably won't care.
Yeah, I don't know if they really have anything. Clockwork might be a good one when that comes out, if that's any good, or that could just be a BioShock clone that never does anything with itself. It's tough to tell because, like, again, that same Xbox tax, that same, again, being tired of their bullshit and not being like, I'll start paying attention to games when they're out. Like, that works both ways, right? Like, there's not a game that on the front end we're really gonna get excited about because of that issue. There's only a game that, like, may review really well and look back in hindsight and be like, oh, okay, that's great. But, like, I think part of the issue, at least, that we're going to see is we're a little bit spoiled. And this is going to be an issue on both sides of the fence, on both Sony and PlayStation, because, like, we have been spoiled. Like, Sony has had a killer, fucking decade? And it doesn't even look like they're necessarily going to be able to maintain that, much less, you know, Microsoft, which, you know, no way in hell. So, like, I feel like we might be a little bit spoiled across the board in the next couple few years. It might be a little hard because Xbox is going to be facing an uphill climb, and I just don't see anything in Sony's current production. So I think Sony's going to have to get a little worse before it gets a little better, because they're going to have to kind of, you know, not do great for this executives to wake up and go back true to form. Or maybe they've come in and canceled most of these live service games and are already working on retooling it. But even if that's the case, there's going to be a delay. There's going to be a hiatus that kind of comes from changing direction like that. It's, you can't change direction without having a stall in momentum. So, I mean, I just kind of feel like there's not a lot across the entire gaming front that's looking super great right now. So,
I agree.
I can't see anything that's changing that.
Yeah, this year is going to be really brutal, man. Like, I think last year was pretty good, you know, because we got a lot of games, but now it's like, what's coming out? Again, we've been trying to answer this question of what does PlayStation have for 2024 for 3 months. The only game we could come up with is Final Fantasy, and that's a fucking third-party game.
Yeah.
And it's for Xbox. Yeah, they do have stuff. And ironically enough, a lot of their games coming out this year are what you would normally see on Sony. You know, narrative-driven games. Very interesting.
I mean, Senua's Saga came out first on the PlayStation. Yeah.
But I still think it's going to be Indiana Jones, even though I don't really care. But I think just because of name recognition, you know, and machine games. People like machine games, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they make really good titles. So yeah. It's like, I mean, I feel like a lot of people just be like, all right, let's see what they can do here.
Let's see about that one. Snack 3 releases. Let's see if it happens. What's next? Yeah, all right. Another one from Mr. Jolly Yellow Nerd. How much of the love for Pal World do you think is genuine enthusiasm for Pal World? And how much is it just plain an FU to Game Freak and Pokemon? Good question.
Hey, can you divide the two? Can you really separate the two?
Like, are you saying why can't it be both?
Why can't it be both?
Yeah, why not Zoidberg? Well, I think more along the lines, like, I think the answer lies somewhere between. Like, I think Power World is a direct response to an itch left unscratched by Pokemon games. So it's not, like, really direct hate. And actually, as I was playing Power World, I kind of realized, I was like, you know, there's no evolution. That's a shame. That's one thing I really do like about Pokemon. So, like, there are things Pokemon is doing really, really well. Still, I think Power World is just one of those, like, Even if you don't update the mechanics, just the graphics, you know, seeing Pokemon in the overworld, like, I think I might have people still fight me on that, be like, do you really dislike seeing Pokemon in the overworld, or are you just halfway up Nintendo's ass? Is, I guess, kind of my very legitimate question to people who, like, have criticisms for things like seeing pals walking around. Like, that is something people have wanted Pokemon forever.
And then, Brett, and then those Nintendo fans will tell you, have you played Pokemon Snap?
Yeah, and Pokemon Snap is the reason people were like, why can't we have Pokemon in the overworld? It's like one of the major, they had seen it happen. They'd seen you do it. So they know that you can do it. Don't get me wrong. I was thinking about this after the episode last time. I was like, you know, I don't really want people to think I'm of the mindset that, like, Pokemon should shift its gears and be like Power World. It's more that I think Power World really is succeeding because of people who are frustrated with Pokemon and giving them that, those things. Like, it's not the perfect game, and it is it's half baked in a lot of ways. It's still an early release. Like, you shouldn't have this much success for a game in early release unless people are excited about the idea more than the product. It was the same thing with DayZ, right? Like, DayZ didn't so much, and yeah, I'm going back there.
Yeah.
Throwdown Classic. DayZ didn't so much sell a product as it sold a promise, and the promise of what that thing was going to be. It was a niche that wasn't at the time catered to. It was the whole idea of a survival game. It was like this, instead of, because at the time everything was fucking matches, everything was death matches and all kinds of, like, what if we had a persistent world in which a group of people tried one continuous death match? It was kind of the proto idea before whatever the fuck Fortnite is, I forget. Arena? No, what the Battle what Royale. Is it called? Battle Royale. It was a precursor to Battle Royale and survival games, right? And it satisfied an idea where people wanted to have a slower, kind of more methodical zoned out type game instead of this quick rinse and repeat, die and respawn arena based combat, which was hugely popularized by Gears of War at the time, right? Where you're basically in something the size of a basketball court murdering each other or getting murdered every 30 to 45 seconds, it feels like. It goes so fast. So it was just kind of a counterbalance to that. And DayZ honestly never really took off. But much like Power World, DayZ sold like fucking gangbusters as soon as it came out. And it, by the very nature of it doing that, like, there, it was a half-baked game, the same way Power World is a half-baked game. You're not selling millions and millions of copies off of the results and the well-made polish of a half-baked game. It just doesn't work like that. What you're selling is this promise and a solution to a problem that you've been seeing. It is excitement that sells games like this in their half-baked state. And that excitement is directly in response to people having issues, people having unrealized wants with a mainline franchise. And usually, honestly, that's not even talking shit. That's just how creative endeavors go, right? Like, you get a Judge Dredd, and then people want to, you know, stray from the idea of the script so much that eventually you get a RoboCop, and you can have both, man. But it's okay when they influence each other. It would be totally within bounds for the Nintendo just to look at, for Game Freak, to look at the things that are succeeding well in Power World and go, okay, we're just going to rip off that motherfucker, or, quote, be heavily inspired by. Cool. I mean, that's fine. Fair game, man. Like, do it. That you know what? In that instance, gamers win, and that's really all I want to see. Like, but unfortunately, the thing that frustrates me and the reason I talk shit, and I think a lot of people on the podcast here will agree, Nintendo won't. They won't take notice. They won't change anything. They won't adapt or anything, even if it's to make a better product for their audience. They don't care. They have your money, and that's just kind of a shitty feeling, man. It's a shitty feeling because we all want to sit around and think that the world doesn't fucking work that way, that some people care about art or their passion or their product or any of the number of things, but then you kind of lean back and you're like, not really. It is just about, like, nah, we made plenty of money. We don't care if you enjoy it better. We don't care if you're gonna like it more. We don't care if we're making formative childhood experiences that will stick with you for decades and beyond and may influence the total, you know, direction of your adult character. We've lost the idea of the importance of stories and experience, but whatever. it's good enough. We'll make money off it. Like, that should not be enough. That should not be okay, but it fucking is. And I'm sorry, I'm never going to be just hooray about that, man. I'm always going to be frustrated by the lack or by unrealized potential. So yeah, it can't. Everything can stay as it will, and Nintendo can never notice or never change or any of that kind of shit. Pokemon can never adjust or come into the 21st century. But I will say this: how much good did it do with Monster Hunter? Like, y'all that are sticking to your guns and you never want Pokemon to change, like, look at how well Monster Hunter came into this century, man. Like, Pokemon could do the same if only Nintendo would just recognize that Power World is a symptom, not the problem.
All right. Go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
Yeah, some thoughts.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
I would say that I agree with what Brett said, but the simpler answer is you can't tell just from sales, right, in the beginning, whether it's a middle finger to Nintendo or people are generally interested. What you have to look at is engagement over time. If the drop-off for the game is low, like if it still has high engagement, if you're still seeing above Counter-Strike numbers or even Counter-Strike numbers a month or 2 months from now, then it's genuine interest. People are genuinely playing and enjoying the game. An FU for Nintendo would be you drop the initial price, right? And then maybe you play it once or twice, you never play it again. So the engagement drops off. So that's the simpler answer. But the stuff Brett elaborated on is absolutely true. And Nintendo won't... there's no course correction for them. They would look at this game only in terms of, like, do we have a legal case, right? And then the answer is most likely, in my opinion, is no. So then they're just going to move on. Just go, you know, stay the course, you know, pick two more colors, and we'll keep going, right? That's what they're going to do.
Yeah. All right. By the way, I want to read a comment here. This is actually about the last question, but felt it was important for me to acknowledge it. This is from Jeff B. Gaming over on YouTube. He goes, since when is third-party exclusives bad? Are we really going to ignore that PS1, PS2 gen was primarily not first-party exclusives? We never said they were bad. I'm just saying that PlayStation's biggest exclusive of the year is a third-party. They don't have any first-parties. That's all I'm saying. I never said whether it was good or bad, you know?
I mean, the one thing about it is that it's like... you know, in the previous generations, it was, you know, especially start, you know, going from the uphill battle of the PS3, you know, guiding into the PlayStation 4, at least the current mentality of a PlayStation and the current power of PlayStation had always been in their first party experiences. Now we are seeing sort of, you know, sort of what sort of something that's indicative of an older generation of PlayStation,
yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, like PlayStation 1 or PlayStation 2, where they were very much dependent on other people to quote unquote make the tapes, because in those days, because that's the way they treated PlayStation as like a video, like them creating a video machine or a DVD player, and that everybody else makes the tapes and they make some of them. But when PlayStation 3 came, there was a point where people were refusing to make games for that thing,
yeah,
because they felt that was very difficult to develop for. So they started to push things forward themselves and push more of their first party. So it became the thing. Okay, so PlayStation is known for their first party experiences. Now the narrative has changed. Nothing's wrong with it.
No.
Obviously, they're at a strong point where they could literally just throw some money at somebody to have to aid in development, get an exclusive rights to it. But at the same time, it's like, that's the question. It's like, okay, so now if the narrative was traditionally, hey, what is Sony got in their first party thing, you know, now it's like, what does PlayStation have in their exclusivity buying thing?
Yeah, again, the only game I know about is fucking Wolverine, and I mean the leak said, yeah, when that's coming, but it's not this year for sure. You know?
Yeah. So and then obviously the other portion of it is that it seems like Insomniac, it just seems to be holding up the bridge that is the first of PlayStation first parties. Like, Naughty Dog has not officially released a next generation title. I don't care what you say about Last of Us, remastered one or remastered two. Those were just old games, just reworked onto the current consoles.
Yep.
Onto the current console. Like I can't really name you any of their bigger companies. Sucker Punch does what do they do? They do Spider-Man, right?
Sucker Punch? Sucker Punch, they do Sly Cooper.
Sly Cooper and
Ghost of Tsushima.
I get Sucker Punch and
Insomniac.
Insomniac kind of, you know, intermingled. Yes, Insomniac's making Spider-Man and they do Ratchet. Sucker Punch does Infamous and they do Sly Cooper. Yeah, but like what is Sucker Punch working on?
Well,
like,
Sucker Punch is Ghost of Tsushima, probably. Presumably the sequel, you know?
Possibly the sequel of Ghost of Tsushima. But yeah, also the other thing about this generation of console of PlayStation, hasn't been a new title for it yet. Like every single generation has had their cornerstone, you know, new PlayStation title that sort of defines that generation. So it's like, you know, PlayStation 3, that was the Uncharted games. PlayStation 4, that's the Horizon Zero Dawns and Ghost of Tsushima, you know, those sorts of games. So what is the one that's coming up for this one to say, this is why you need to have a PlayStation? Besides, you know, obviously the third party's exclusive the rights they bought.
No, Returnal doesn't count because they didn't set the trend for this generation. We're talking about, Manny, you were very specific about that. It's like a game that really kind of push things forward for the system or whatever.
Returnal exists and it did very well, but I don't see it pushing. Yeah, I don't
no,
see
I didn't it do
pushing
it.
Anything but, forward. Like, in other words, is everybody, are they selling Returnal t-shirts and stuff like they are, you know, like all kinds of other merchandising like they are for like Ghost of Tsushima or Horizon Zero Dawn or Last of Us? Returnal is not nowhere on that level.
Yeah. So,
by the way, right, I do want
go ahead. Go ahead.
I do want to mention real quick that when Returnal released, it wasn't a Sony first party game.
That's right. That's right. Yes, that's right. It wasn't. It was third party when it first released.
Yes, there was also that.
But your point stands because yes, we have gotten some new IPs that are only for PlayStation 5, and none of them has broken ground. Nobody's talking about All Stars. No one's going to talk about Foam Stars. You know. It ain't gonna happen.
Foam Stars is not a first party, though.
Oh, it's not. So there you go. So
Foam Stars is a third party Square Enix game. The one that's
you're right, Kishak. You're right. Spider-Man 4 for PS4 was technically not first party either. Not at first. Remember, Insomniac was still independent.
Well, no, they were. It was it's considered a first party because
Sony's Sony. Flipping all, you're right. You're
because
right.
Sony's flipping all of the bills you're right, for the game. Right. So no, the one that is considered now a first party is the Namco Bandai game now.
Which one isn't is it? That?
The Samurai game, isn't that considered, or is that another? Yeah, that's one they just bought the rights to. I don't know what they did. I think they.
Astro's Playroom, there you go. But even that is not a new franchise.
No, Astro's Playroom is not a new franchise. Astro's was a PlayStation VR game. Yep. So nothing, right so far, they don't have anything. All that has been new has not hit the marks that they have, you know, how previous new titles have hit.
There is no generation-defining game for PS5.
These are not generation-defining games.
Yeah.
I mean, Astro Playroom is a fun-as-hell game. It is a very, like, if you, like, to for you to get that game out of the box on a PlayStation 5, it's a very well-made game, but it's not a new title.
Yeah. Although Kishak, he's right. Technically, it's the best-selling PlayStation game because it comes with the PlayStation.
Yes, it is the best. It is the if we're using the Wii numbers, because that's what the Nintendo Wii, they used to count.
Wii Sports.
Wii Sports. They used to say that was the best-selling Nintendo Wii.
Yeah, game. Astro's Playroom, 50 million copies sold. So there you go. Oh man! All right, good stuff. But circling back to PAL World, I think what Chris and Brett said was spot on. I don't really have any, you know, I don't have any skin in the game. I don't care about PAL World. I don't like survival games. I don't give a fuck about Pokemon. So I don't have any opinions. What about you, Brian? What do you think? Because I know you're enjoying Pal World. What do you think about the question? Like, is it that people just like the game for what it is, or is it because they like Pokemon, or is it a mix of the two?
I think it's a mix of the two, to be fair, because, again, I'm not a huge fan of Pokemon. I just enjoy the concept of it. And as I said last time, it's like the recent games are just not giving me what I want, and Power World seems to be stepping more in that direction. So that's why I gravitated towards it. And I can see a case being made for either or, but as Brett says, I think it may just be like a mix of the two, because, again, people are just tired of Pokemon Company and the nonsense, and they want something else, and yeah, maybe Power World is doing that. And then there's lots of people that just don't like Pokemon Company, so that's also helping. And then I think that caused people to take notice, and then that caused a massive push of people buying the game. And as Chris says, it's all about the longevity. So let's see how this falls off. Because I thought at first, okay, it's just another Temtem. I mean, who remembers that game?
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if people do, because I even forgot about that game. So I thought it, like, Power World would just be another Temtem, and then it just kept on rolling and rolling and rolling, and then now we're here to the point where it's like beating out Counter-Strike. It's like, nothing beats Counter-Strike. Like, I thought the only thing that could beat Counter-Strike was, like, Half-Life 3. So, I don't know. So we'll just see how this falls off, and it will fall off eventually, but will it be a slow burn or will it be a quick burn? No one knows.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. Moving on here. Last question of the night. Alpha Chuck, what's going on, brother? His question is, what would be the breaking point for the constantly increasing demand on developers by gamers and the overly inflating budgets it takes to make AAA games? The industry is backing itself into a corner, and it will get to a point that it will not be worth it to try to create a big budget game. Could this lead to a resurgence of AA studios? So this is something, you know, we've been talking about this for a while. Sean Layden brought up years ago.
Yeah, and they came down on him for saying it, for even implying it.
Yeah, and then years later, other people started saying it. And there was like, oh yeah, they're right. It's like, you know, Sean Layden already said that. We had this discussion on Throwdown, where basically, you know, a big prominent person said the same thing, and everybody in the industry was praising him. Like, yes, this is 100% true. It's like, Sean Layden said the same thing 2 years before that, and y'all motherfuckers torched them, you know? Anyway, regardless, this is something that, you know, people have been talking about. Because these budgets are getting crazy. Think about this. The Spider-Man remaster on PS5 cost $50 million. A fucking remaster, you know? So, I don't know, man. And then when it comes to AA games, again, because I really like the fact that he added gamers in there. Because, you know, if you try to sell a game for $40, $50, oh, this shit's got to be cheap. I'm not playing that. You know, that's what people think, you know? So, listen, if I had an answer for this shit, I'd be a fucking millionaire right now. I don't know what it could do, and I don't know if there will be a breaking point. I mean, you would assume there would be, right? It's like, you can't have these high-ass budgets, you know? But I don't know, man. I honestly don't know. Again, we've had this discussion before. We can't come up with a good answer because nobody can, you know? Where's Michael Packard at, you know?
Yeah, man, well, these budgets. Like, after I seen the Spider-Man stuff, I was like, how much? It's like, I mean, we're Jesus hearing.
Got it. I was talking to
exactly,
a dog.
Brett.
You know? Fresh.
It's like, how much did Endgame cost to make? What? Was like around 300 million?
Something like that.
And then we have games that just casually cost that much to make. And it's like, it's just mind-boggling. It's like, that's, some of these budgets are probably more GDP than most countries, you know, and it's just kind of like, what is going on? And it's, again, it's only going to get worse, only going to get higher, and I hate to be that guy, but I'm going to say it. Like, when you're on the other side of it, and you, again, people may talk about how much they love Spider-Man and how great it is, but are people really saying that that was worth the amount that it cost to make in the end? I don't know. Are people saying the same thing about Last of Us 2, where it probably cost around probably 100, 150, some, give or take? Was that really worth that much amount? Where we have games like, well, you have smaller games in general that probably cost like a fraction of the budget that come out, probably have similar return on investment. You know, it's just, I'm just staggered by just how much the games are costing. And to me, it just seems like it's just not going to work in the long run. In two generations, we could be seeing games are like easily $500 million plus. And that's probably without marketing. And I just don't see that as being sustainable unless somehow these games rack in like 20 million copies each. And so basically, if they don't do Call of Duty numbers, then they're not profitable. And that's a really weird place I don't want to be in.
I'm glad you said 500 million without budget, because that's how much Destiny costs with budget, with marketing, you know?
Yeah. Even then, when I heard Destiny's cost, I was like, the whole thing was half a billion. Like,
that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was 10 years ago.
Still, it's like half a billion. It's like, it's just mind-boggling just how much that was. Again, I don't know how much return they got on that. Probably got a decent amount, but still, it's like, it's not sustainable, you know? It's the only way that it's sustainable is if these companies are worth trillions and trillions, and that's the only way that is sustainable. But they're not worth, I mean, how much is Apple worth, or Microsoft worth, sorry?
Like 3 trillion, isn't right?
It? 3 trillion, yeah.
Yeah, so you could argue that Microsoft could absorb that, but then that's just Microsoft itself. Like, it's in that position where it could absorb that type of cost. But then, again, that's just for the Xbox division, and it's, oh man, it's big numbers. It's big numbers, and it's getting me scared. And I believe that is what might cause AAA games just to implode on themselves. Is all these spiraling costs and things just getting more stretched out. I mean, maybe that's why there's like Microsoft, microtransactions, season passes, game. No, what's the thing like battle passes and all sorts. Blue maybe that's why all this stuff exists, because they need to get some sort of better returns. So we could be looking down a situation where games cost more, but then we get more of everything. You know, a game comes out with a season pass, DLC, microtransactions, loot boxes, come out with all the things that we hate, and that might be the new standard. We have no idea.
Yeah, Carlos, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I agree with Brian. I feel like I've been mentioning this for years. The middle class is in gaming is pretty much almost non-existent. There hasn't been people, you know. Developers are more focused on making big budget games, and because of that, it hampers creativity. It they have to make it. Well, they feel like they have to make these games, since they're massive budgets. They have to make them using a formula where it's like, what type of formula? Oh, well, the Fortnite formula, or the PUBG formula, or the GTA formula, or you know, this or that formula, or put everything in it. And it's just there are games that become formulaic, and you know, and somehow these publishers and developers are surprised when these games don't sell, even though they put a lot of money in them. It's because they lack creativity. They don't really do anything different than the game that's already super mega popular, that's done it already and probably does it better than you can. And you know, and one thing that I want to mention is, I'm curious to see the difference, and we might not get this, but what the difference is in budget between Senua's Saga and Senua's Sacrifice. Because question. I feel like Ninja Theory, once they got acquired by Microsoft, I mean, they released a AA game in Senua's Sacrifice, right? It was the little engine that could, and it sold a lot of copies, and it was critically acclaimed and everything. And now It's been God knows how many years. Was there 7, 8 years since that game came out?
Yeah, something like that.
And I feel like maybe and this is just me, you know, speculating, but maybe Ninja Theory now thinks, oh, this game has to be big now. You know, they can't do another Senua's Sacrifice AA type game. This has to be a AAA game. Like, it might be 8 hours still, but you know, they might have to do this and that. So I'd be curious to see how that difference is between both, because maybe Ninja Theory is now, instead of being a great AA studio, they're attempting now to do AAA games, especially after Bleeding Edge, because Bleeding Edge was a massive failure.
Them also trying games as a service. Look how well that turned
out. Yep. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It sucks. It sucks because, you know, most of the budget is going into video games that are being made in a factory, and that factory lacks creativity and or direction or, you know, or anything that's going to propel everything forward. And, you know, someone mentioned, I think Kishag mentioned GTA 6 is probably $1 billion. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Neither would I. I could see that.
Yep.
Yeah, if Destiny cost $500 million 10 years ago, it's not unrealistic to believe GTA 6 is over $1 billion now, you know?
And you know how they do, they go hard with marketing.
Yep. Oh, yeah, yeah. I absolutely believe that. And then Blitz, what's going on, man? Showing up. He goes, and people wonder why AAA is full of remakes and sequels. Yeah, I mean, if you spend that much money on these fucking games, you gotta play it safe, you know? Shit is crazy.
Yo, man, we're going to release another Pokemon. It's just a different color.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Oh, man. Yeah. All right, man. Bingo. And that's why I'm less interested. Yeah. All right, man. I think that's pretty much it. Another good show. Kind of cool tonight. We had the same amount of people watching on Twitch and on YouTube. So we're getting our numbers back. Slowly but sure. Throw us back on YouTube.
Good stuff.
You know? I'm on YouTube. Like, excuse me? They're back? All right. Do we have anything to plug around him?
Yo, real quick. It's like, yo, throwing us back on YouTube. That and Torrance Davis.
And Torrance Davis. The cracker. Oh, man. I guess I'm Negan, still on hiatus, right?
Yeah. Until next month, still on hiatus, as well as Adam. And
Adam's on hiatus, you know.
Yep, Adam's on hiatus. He's probably you know, in his doing his Odin sleep. So you'll probably be back for I Am Negan once the Rick and Michonne show comes up with Mr. Richard Bailey Jr. as well, Mr. RBJ.
Oh yes,
shout out to him. He was in the chat. I don't know if he's still in the chat, but shout out to him.
Looking forward to his review of Suicide Squad. That'll be interesting. You know, very interesting.
That's probably his game of the year.
It probably is. You know, oh man. And like I said, Invincible podcast will be back. Was the show coming back from March 14th? So the podcast will be back around that time. So, because Invincible usually airs on Fridays, I believe. So,
yes.
Yeah. So we'll be back on the 15th, you know, on the Coalition with a K, baby. You know,
the Coalition.
TheCoalition.com. Rich probably didn't get no review code. No, he didn't. Now, by the way, I could disclose that Rich is one of the people that I talked to who did not get a review code. Because nobody is, because they're trying to hide this game. Let's just be real here, you know? Let's just be real here. All right, man, make sure you follow, throw it on Twitch and Twitter, join the Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. You can also find us on any podcast app by searching for Throwdown Show. That's two words, Throwdown Show. Throwdownshow.com to listen to past episodes. And if you have been watching us live on YouTube and like the video, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell notified of when we go live every Thursday and Sunday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on this channel, man. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time, and also hope you enjoyed the sort of simulcast that we sort of did. Well, we might want to try that a little bit more with the actual channel. Let us know. All right.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
And Brian Manjoma.
Later, people.
Right, guys, you already know, man. Thursday, later.
Later, guys.
Ladies.